pain kept John awake most of the night, so Andy didn't sleep much either. At sunup, he boiled coffee and fried bacon. He could persuade John to eat only a little.
It tastes better when a woman fixes it.
You've got no woman.
Now and again I do. They stay till we can't stand one another. That don't generally take long.
Andy caught up the horses, packed the mule, and helped John settle onto the travoy. The second day hurting was more severe than the first.
Next time I get shot, I'll try to be closer to town.
Andy felt like groaning with John as the travoy dragged across rough ground. About mid-morning, he saw a wagon moving eastward on a path parallel to his own. Its hoops were partially covered by canvas. A milk cow plodded along behind at the end of a short rope.
Hold on tight, John. We may get you a better ride.
The people with the wagon gave no sign that they had seen this makeshift procession. Andy realized they were going to outdistance him. He drew his pistol and fired a couple of shots into the air. The wagon stopped. People who had walked alongside quickly disappeared behind it.
They may think we're Indians.
We are, aren't we? You, anyway.
Just half. We better move up slow or they're liable to shoot us both. I don't need any more of that.
Andy stopped the mare, tied a handkerchief to his rifle barrel, and waved it over his head. Moving closer, he saw a man half hidden behind the rear of the wagon, his rifle aimed and ready.
That's close enough. State your business.
I'm a ranger. Got a wounded man here. He needs help.
The man beckoned him to move closer, but he held the rifle steady.
You got anything to show? You're a ranger.
Just my word.
The man stepped hesitantly into plain view. He appeared to be in early middle age, wearing an untrimmed salt-and-pepper beard, a plain cotton shirt without a collar, and faded bib overalls. He lowered the rifle.
I'm taking you at your word. Just be careful that whatever you're dragging don't booger my team. Got my wife and youngest baby in the wagon.
Would you be heading for Fort Griffin?
I'm sorry to say that we are. We'd prefer to go around that Sodom and Gomorrah, but we've got to pick up a few provisions to carry us back to East Texas.
Andy thought the description of the town was exaggerated, but this was not the time to argue the point.
Have you got room to carry this man? The travoy is about to kill him.
Is he a prisoner?
No, he's been helping me. Got shot in the line of duty.
I reckon we could shuffle things around and make room.
2 days later, Andy and John sat in a doctor's office in Fort Griffin. The doctor was an all-business little man, wearing an old gray vest with tiny holes burned in front, indicating carelessness with his smoking. He gave John a thorough feeling over without regard to the pain he caused.
Who wrapped you up so tight?
Andy dreaded the lecture he was sure was coming.
I did.
It's a good thing. He's just got one broken rib, but it's enough.
He turned to John.
If this ranger hadn't taken good care of you, you could be hammering on the pearly gates by now because of a punctured lung. Or you could be dead of blood poisoning from the wound. Either way, you'd be trying to look up through 6 feet of dirt.
What should I do with him now?
Well, there's a hotel down the street. It's not the Brown Palace, but it's got no bedbugs as far as I know. Put him there where I can keep looking in on him for a few days.
A few days?
A broken rib is not like a broken spoke in a wheel. It can't be fixed in an hour.
Andy knew the state office would complain about paying for the doctor, much less the hotel, especially inasmuch as John was not a state employee. If it came to that, Andy would pay the bills out of his own pocket. He owed John that much for having gotten him into this fix. To make things worse, he had lost all track of Luther Cordell. The hotel manager moved a cot into John's room for Andy.
Nothing is too good for the Rangers. It will be good having you here in case some of the drovers stay too long in the barroom. We had a bad robbery in one of the saloons a few nights ago.
I heard about that. Folks seem to think a couple of drovers did it.
Maybe yes, maybe no. There are some suspicions about that. Cowboys are free spenders. That money is a temptation to vultures who hover about, looking to reap where they have not sown.
It takes a low class of criminal to hold up a saloon.
The petty criminal will settle for less if he can get it with little risk. You say you've been hunting for a man who robbed a bank?
I guess you can consider him a higher class of criminal. Not only was it a bank, but it was in one of the biggest towns in Texas.
A man of high ambition.
Well, it's my ambition to catch him.
Andy was hard put to decide what to do. Loyalty to Choctaw John would require him to remain here at least until he knew John was going to recover without complications. Loyalty to the Rangers, on the other hand, would require him to go back where they had lost Cordell's trail and try again to discover some trace. John had found that Cordell turned northward a while after leaving the ruins of Phantom Hill. It might have been only a temporary change of direction in an effort to throw off pursuit, or it could mean Cordell had not meant to travel farther west in the first place. It could mean he had circled back around, that he could even be here in Fort Griffin. It was a long shot, about as likely as Andy's getting an apology from Farley Brackett. Still, it was an interesting possibility. Enough to argue for his staying around at least a few days, should the state office question his decision. He might hear or see something. His first order of business, after seeing to John's needs, was to visit the local law. He found the sheriff's office was in Albany, but a deputy was assigned to Fort Griffin. He introduced himself and told about his research. The deputy gave him scant comfort. Cordell felt satisfaction in a job well done as he looked at the repaired corral fence. Only the blind would call it pretty, but it was strong, and it would hold just about any animal bigger than a house cat. Dobie Jackson leaned on a shovel, sleeves rolled up and shirt stained with sweat.
I hope you're satisfied now. I don't see why we had to build the whole thing over. A little patching would have done it.
Nah, a job worth doing at all is worth doing right. Too bad we had to use old lumber, but at least you won't have to be ashamed of it now.
I wasn't ashamed of it in the first place.
It ought to give you a warm feeling knowing you finished a good piece of work.
All I feel is tired.
Cordell's good mood began to sour. He didn't know what it would take to straighten this boy out. Maybe a roof needed to fall in on him or something.
His paw ought to have taken a strap to that boy a long damn time ago. Not my place to do it, bad as I'd like to.
It bothered Luther that Dobie looked a little like his brother, and he was showing signs of following in Buster's wayward footsteps. Luther hadn't found a way to tell Aurelia Jackson that her eldest son was dead. He meant every day to do it, but every day he put it off, dreading the pain it would cause her. He immersed himself in work, repairing much around here that had long needed fixing. He bullied Dobie into helping him, hoping some healthy sweat would bring the youngster around to a greater appreciation for the home he had. Dobie had been a competent worker, though not an eager one. He took no initiative. He had to be told what to do, and sometimes, how to do it. Luther liked this farm. It stirred up half-forgotten memories of one long ago in Louisiana. What he would give if he could turn back the years and start over. Seeing Mrs. Jackson every day made him think of the wife he lost by going off to war, and the empty years he spent alone. He barely remembered anymore what she looked like. It had been a long time since he conjured up a clear vision of her as she was the last time they were together. But he remembered well the long and futile search he made for her and their son. If he still lived, that boy would be fully grown now, older than Dobie. Cordell often tried to imagine what he would look like, what kind of man he would be. A better man, surely, than his father. It was just as well the boy never got to know him or to know what his father became. Even if he chanced to hear the name Cordell, he would not recognize it. That was not the name he was born with. So far, Cordell hadn't felt comfortable enough to use Aurelia's given name, though she indicated he need not continue being formal. He was hesitant to call her anything except Mrs. Jackson. Buster still haunted him, especially here where the boy grew up. He was sure that when he finally told Aurelia what happened, she would hate him.
We just as well go to the house. I expect supper be ready before long.
No readier than I am.
Nothing like hard work give you an appetite, huh?
Or blisters.
Dobie looked at his hands and frowned.
Before the war, did you have any slaves?
I never had no money enough.
Too bad. You'd have been a good slave driver.
Cordell pretended to take that for a joke, though he knew it was not meant to be. He had suffered about as much of Dobie's attitude as his patience would endure. He felt a strong urge to tell Mrs. Jackson about Buster, then ride on. Any day now, a ranger or other lawman might show up at the door. Though he'd seen no sign of pursuit, he had a nagging feeling it was there somewhere. It was time he headed west again, or he might become so attached to this place, he would stay and let himself be captured. They headed to the house.
Hey, Dobie, wait up!
Two horsemen approached from the east. Luther recognized them as the Keeler brothers. Dobie grinned and turned to face the pair. Cordell felt his stomach draw into a knot. He had seen the brothers twice before, and they gave him indigestion both times.
Come and go with us to town. We'll have us a time.
Cordell didn't give Dobie a chance to accept.
Dobie ain't had his supper.
Keeler gave Cordell a hard look.
He can eat supper in town.
No, it costs too much. He gonna stay here.
Dobie turned hostile eyes on him.
Who are you to tell me what I can't do? You're not my daddy.
Is this old man kin to you?
Not kin to me or anybody else I know of. He just came here to bum a meal and decided to stay.
Well, who the hell are you, anyway?
It don't matter who I am. Just know that I'm the man who can whip the both of you.
He glanced at Dobie.
Three of you, if it come to that.
The three young men tried to stare him down, but they couldn't hold their gaze as long. They all cut their eyes away.
We're going on, Dobie, with or without you.
It's gonna be without him.
The brothers rode away.
You ought to steer clear of people like that. They'll do nothing but get you in trouble.
Who I choose for friends is none of your business. I'm a grown man.
Ha! Lacking a few years.
We wouldn't do anything but have a little fun. Ain't been much fun around here lately with all the work you've found to do.
There ain't nothing wrong with a little fun as long as it's the right kind. But those people like the Keelers, they got peculiar ideas about what that is.
He was convinced the two brothers had held up and pistol-whipped the saloon keeper in town.
Let yourself step out onto that outlaw trail. Pretty soon, you find you can't get off it. You're trapped there
Luther broke off. He had been about to blurt, like your brother. For a moment, he hoped he was beginning to get through to Dobie.
How much longer you figure to stay here?
I ain't decided.
Maybe you figure to stay from now on. Maybe you think you'll smooth-talk my mother till she decides to marry you, and you'll have this farm real cheap.
I got no such notion. You got a dirty mind, boy, and a dirty mouth.
Dobie's eyes blazed with defiance.
You gonna try to wash it out with soap?
Not even lye soap would be strong enough. Now your mother waving at us for supper. Go get yourself in the house.
They ate supper in strained silence. Aurelia looked from her son to Cordell and back again. It was clear she felt the tension between them. Dobie left some of the food on his plate and strode out onto the front porch to flop in an old wooden chair and sulk.
I saw the Keeler boys ride up to talk to Dobie. What'd they want?
Wanted him to go to town with them.
I have a feeling he would have gone had it not been for you. What'd you say to him?
Cordell felt as if he were trapped in a narrow chute.
Well, I just told him it wouldn't be a good idea that those boys are no account.
I know. I've tried to talk to Dobie, but he's drawn to them somehow. He doesn't want to listen to what I say. I'm glad you're here, Mr. Goodson. You can talk to him better than I can.
Well, it's not because he likes what I tell him. It's because he's half afraid of me.
He's still more a boy than a man. He'll come around when he gets a little older and has a little more experience.
Aurelia sipped a little coffee and put down the cup.
Cold.
She probably meant the coffee, but she could have meant her son, Cordell thought.
I'm glad you're here to keep him away from trouble.
Well, now, there are reasons why I'll have to be moving on pretty soon. I may have stayed too long already.
He noticed her dark brown eyes the first time he saw her. Now they looked even darker and much troubled.
Whatever your reasons, can't they wait? I need you here. Dobie needs you.
He felt himself melting under her steady gaze. He knew he should end it right here. He should saddle up and leave without spending another night in the barn. He also knew that he wouldn't.
I believe I'll have another cup of coffee. Can I bring you one?
A few nights later, Luther sat on the edge of his cot in the barn as he mended harness by lantern light. He heard horses approaching the corral.
Hurry up, Dobie. Come on. Don't forget your saddlebags. Quiet. Give me a minute.
He put out the light and stepped through the open barn door into the darkness. He recognized Dobie by the way he moved, catching and saddling his horse. Two other men on horseback waited outside the corral. He couldn't see their features, but he sensed they were the Keeler brothers. Unable to make out what they were saying, he moved closer, careful that his footsteps not be heard.
Good thing Ma went to bed early. Otherwise, I couldn't have slipped out of the house. She'll raise hell when I come home.
You'll be back before daylight. It's time you cut loose from the apron strings anyway. You're a man, ain't you?
Yeah, you'll come back with your pockets full. We figure there's a lot of drover money piled up in old Oscar Count's saloon. He was pretty snotty to us last time we was in his joint. We'll pay him a visit as he closes up.
You meaning to rob him?
Yeah, let's don't say rob. Let's just say we don't like to see an old man having to tote all the extra weight around. We'll lighten his load.
People in town know us too well. They'll be coming to get us.
Not if we cover our faces like before.
One of the Keelers pulled a small cloth sack from his pocket. It had slits cut for the eyes.
Oscar will think we're some of them drovers. You know, taking their money back.
You like money, don't you?
Sure I do, but...
But nothing! All you have to do is stay outside and hold the horses for us. Now get in the saddle and let's be moving!
Dobie took the reins and started to mount. Cordell saw that he had made up his mind.
Dobie, you get down from there. You're not going anyplace.
Luther ran to stop the boy. One of the Keelers jumped his horse out in front of him.
Where'd he come?
Cordell's first reflex was to dodge the horse. Before he could do anything else, Keeler swung a pistol barrel and struck a glancing blow to the side of his head. Cordell staggered and went down.
You didn't kill him, did you?
No, his head's too hard. I just dizzied him a little. Come on, let's go.
Cordell pushed to his knees, choking on the dust the horses raised as they rode away. He saw Aurelia step out onto the porch in her nightgown. She looked in the direction the three young men had gone. Then she saw Cordell bracing himself against the fence. She ran toward him.
Mr. Goodson, what happened?
Cordell rubbed his pounding head. He felt a small tickle of sticky blood where the pistol had struck.
Those damn Keelers.
Dobie went with them, didn't he?
I'm afraid he done did it.
There'll be the death of him one of these days.
I'll saddle my horse and go fetch him back.
He stepped away from the fence and almost fell. She grabbed his arm and steadied him.
I don't think you're in any condition to ride. I'll hitch up the wagon and go myself.
He helped her with the team, then went into the barn. He hadn't worn his pistol since he'd come here, but he buckled his gun belt around his waist and climbed up into the wagon. He held onto the seat the first mile or so, until he felt steady enough not to fall down.
You find him for me. I'll take him by the ear and drag him out. Maybe that'll shame him enough to bring him to his senses.
Well, make him run away for good.
What else can we do?
I don't know. I'll figure it out when the time comes.
Approaching town, they circled around a trail herd bedded down for the night. Cordell saw what appeared to be the chuck wagon, a lighted lantern atop the box like a beacon to guide the cowboys to camp. They passed a festive group of riders who had evidently finished their evening in town and were returning to the herd.
Cowboys. Most of them aren't much older than Dobie. They're David's age, a lot of them. I wish I could hear from David. You don't know how hard it is, not knowing where your son is gone.
Cordell knew. He'd done a lot of thinking about his own lost son, especially since Buster's death. He felt it would ease his pain a little if he could talk to her about it, but he didn't want to burden this good woman with his problem. She had too many of her own. Most of the town was dark. The streets were almost deserted. A few horses were still tied in front of the saloons, but Cordell figured most of the visiting drovers had quit for the night and returned to their herds. The last stragglers would soon give up and allow the saloons to close. That, he knew, was when the Keelers would strike. They sat in the town's wagon yard.
What do we do now?
I'm gonna see if I can find Dobie, and you wait right here. It may take a while.
He won't want to come with you.
I know that, but he gonna come.
He climbed down from the wagon and tested his balance. His head still hurt a little, but his legs were steady. He thought it unlikely the Keelers would enter Oscar's place until they were ready to rob him, for he would remember them by the way they were dressed, even if they covered their faces. If they were smart, they wouldn't be drinking at all tonight. Whiskey was dangerous when a man set out to do a job that was risky even for somebody cold sober. Whiskey allowed Sheriff Tom Blessing to capture Cordell after that Galveston bank job. No, if the boys had the judgment God gave a jackrabbit, they'd be lurking in the dark, waiting for Oscar to close up. Still, Cordell hadn't figured them for high intelligence. Most criminals he had known were longer on nerve than brains. He stopped in front of the first saloon he came to and peered through the window. He counted two customers he surmised were drovers. The bartender stood watching them impatiently, evidently hoping they were about ready to call it a night. A small white bandage on the side of his head told Cordell he was one of the keelers robbed some time back. When he stepped out from behind the car, Cordell saw that he had a pistol belt strapped around his waist. He wasn't going to accept a second robbery without a fight. Cordell remembered Oscar kept a shotgun within easy reach behind his bar. The keelers might not find him to be easy pickings. He walked past several darkened buildings until he reached Oscar's place. A lighted lantern hung beneath the porch roof. As before, a lamp stood on the bar. It furnished the only light inside the saloon. Cordell eased up to the window and looked through. He didn't expect to see the keelers and Dobie there, but he had to be sure. He saw only two customers sitting at a table halfway toward the back door. Cordell gave them a cursory glance, then felt a sudden alarm and looked again. One face was vaguely familiar. Cordell searched his memory. He had seen it somewhere weeks ago. But where? Realization struck him like the kick of a mule. This man had visited Tom Blessing in the jail just before Blessing was killed. Cordell wasn't certain, but this man could have been one of those shooting at him during the jailbreak. He could even be the one whose bullet struck Buster. He must be a lawman of some kind, perhaps a ranger.
Damn.
Cordell's first instinct was to grab a horse and run. He went so far as to survey the few horses that remained tied on the street, wondering which he should take. But he hesitated. His mind went back to the woman waiting at the wagon yard. She depended on him to save her son from himself. He couldn't leave until he'd fulfilled his obligation to her. He retreated to a dark space between two buildings and waited, his stomach in turmoil as he rethought his options, to run or to stay. The two customers left the saloon. Oscar came out onto the narrow porch and blew out the lantern and went back inside. The lamp on the bar still burned. Cordell heard horses and saw three riders coming down the dark street at a walk. Two, wearing sacks for masks, dismounted in front of the saloon and handed their reins to the third. Cordell knew that would be Dobie. He waited until the two keelers entered the saloon, then stepped out into the open. He swung up onto one of the keelers' horses while Dobie froze in astonishment.
Come on, boy, we're getting you away from here.
The hell?
Cordell swung his fist with all the strength he could muster. He held Dobie to prevent him from falling, though the boy lost his hat and the mask. Cordell grabbed Dobie's reins and moved into a run back up the street. By the time Luther and the boy reached the wagon yard, people were spilling out onto the street. He led Dobie's horse up against the wagon and gave the stunned boy a shove that tumbled him out of the saddle and into the wagon bed. He swung to the ground and gave the keeler horse a slap on the rump. It trotted down the street. He tied Dobie's to the tailgate and climbed up beside Aurelia.
I heard shooting. Is he?
He not shot. I hit him with my fist because he was fixing to get himself into bad trouble and I didn't have no damn time for an argument.
It sounded like somebody got shot.
Them Keeler boys, I expect. But as far as anybody needs to know, Dobie never come to town and us need him.
Thank God. And thank you too, Mr. Goodson. I'll always owe you for this.
You don't owe me nothing, ma'am.
He flipped the reins and put the team into a trot.
I had a boy once, but I lost him. You lost a boy, too. I didn't want to see you lose another one.
The wagon bumped along the road. As they neared the house, she broke a long silence.
You don't have a home, do you, Mr. Goodson?
I used to, long time ago.
Since you've been here, a lot of things have changed for the better. I do wish you'd stay.
He felt his throat tighten. Regret weighed on him like a stone.
Aurelia, there's no place I'd rather be right now than here. It's like I found what I've been looking for the last 20, 30 years. But there's reasons I can't stay, and this ain't the time to talk about them. Right now, let's just get Dobie home. Somebody come asking for him, we can say he'd been there all night long, huh?
Andy was itching to leave town. Choctaw John said he wasn't sure he was healed enough to ride, though Andy suspected he simply liked the wages. John was walking around on his own and discovered Oscar Count's a saloon without help from Andy. He claimed whiskey eased the pain.
I thought it was against the law to sell liquor to Indians.
I ain't but half of one. It's the other half that drinks.
With the aid of a deputy sheriff, Andy contacted other lawmen in the region, alerting them to be on the lookout for Cordell. He decided Griffin was as good a place as any to await developments. He passed the time by visiting drovers, who came by with northward herds, learning about the areas from which they started, the chances of going into ranching for himself. Perhaps if he found the right place, he could wean Bethel away from the family farm and shed himself a Farley Brackett for once and for all. Oscar was a flowing fountain of information, though little of it was of help to Andy. He had been in Fort Griffin since buffalo hunting days.
You ain't smelled smells till you smelled a stack of buffalo hides from the downwind side. They'd blister your nose. And flies? Oh, they'd swarm to where you couldn't see the sun hardly. There wasn't but one saving grace to the buffalo trade. There's the money. Ooh, we had flush times here while they lasted.
Looked like you've been doing pretty good with the trail herds coming by.
But during spring and part of the summer. Which shuts off then because they want to get to Kansas before the snow flies. Them South Texas cattle don't take kindly to a blizzard, and neither do South Texas cowboys. So I gotta make hay while the sun shines. Yeah, I'm afraid it ain't gonna shine much longer here. The railroads are soon gonna finish off the trail drives.
We've heard about the robbery that took place some nights ago. Have you taken precautions?
Oscar stepped behind the bar and brought up a double-barreled shotgun.
I got old Chickamauga here. Kicks like a mule, but it blows a hole big enough to drive a wagon through.
If they give you a chance to use it.
Oh, I never get far from it when there's suspicious-looking characters in here.
Andy described Cordell as best he could.
Been anybody in here who looked like that?
There's half a dozen of them any night. Hell, you come close to describing me, except I'm too old to fit. Come to think of it, I remember one man in particular. He was sitting back yonder, minding his own business, when them Keeler boys come in one night and started hoorahing a couple of my customers. Well, me and him, we set him straight. He looked like he could chew him up and spit him out. I think he put the Indian sign on him because they ain't been back.
What did he look like?
No, about the way you described, only he didn't have no beard. Just a few days' whiskers was all. He put away enough whiskey to bring a mule to its knees, but it didn't faze him none that I could see.
Do you know where he came from, or where he went?
Never seen him before or since. I judge that he might be bossing a trail herd. He looked like one of them tough cowmen from down in brush country. If so, well, he's close to the Red River by now, or across it.
And he eased. It seemed unlikely that Cordell would be with a trail drive. Cattle herds traveled no more than about 10 miles a day, and that only on the good days. Cordell would want to move faster. Oscar brought Andy a beer and filled John's whiskey glass.
Well, you fellers are welcome to sit here as long as you like. It's on the house. If they hear there's a ranger and his helper around, them robbers are apt to steer clear of Griffin.
I can't stay in town much longer. I've got to get out and look for Cordell.
You don't have any idea where he's at, do you?
No.
So any direction you go, you're apt to be moving further away from him instead of closer, ain't that right?
That's a way of looking at it.
So, if I was you, I'd stay right here till I heard something. That makes sense, don't it?
Andy knew it made sense to Oscar, but he had a vested interest in keeping a ranger here. The state office might not feel the same way.
Well, maybe just a little bit longer.
Andy had about made up his mind to leave town. He'd received a wire from Austin telling him to continue the search for Cordell at his own discretion, though the state office offered no new leads to help him. He had satisfied himself that Cordell was not in Fort Griffin. He was undecided where to go from here.
John, I'll write a voucher for what the state owes you. You can submit it from back home.
I guess my vacation is over, and so is Thaddeus's. I've missed being able to wart that old skinflint.
A local citizen came in and visited with Oscar a couple of minutes, his expression grim. He spoke in a voice so low that Andy couldn't make out what he was saying. Oscar came to Andy, his face troubled.
I hope y'all ain't in a hurry to go to bed.
What's the trouble?
None yet, but a friend of mine just told me he saw them Keeler boys down by the river.
You think they may be up to no good?
I never seen them when they wasn't. And I hear there's another one with them. Probably that Jackson kid.
Jackson. Andy wondered why that name sounded familiar. He tried to remember where he'd heard it.
I've suspicioned all along it weren't no drovers that pistol-whipped and robbed old Shep. I believe it was them Keelers. I expect they held a grudge against me since the night that me and that stranger ran him out of this place.
Have you got your money in a safe place?
Nah, I keep enough behind the bar to make change. The rest is in a steel box under a trap door back here. Ain't but 3 or 4 people besides me know that.
Yeah, if they're planning to rob you, they probably figure to do it as you close up when you're by yourself. So me and John will let them see us leave, but we won't go far.
Oscar went back to the bar and checked the shotgun.
This town has put up with their shenanigans long enough. If they come here on mischief, they got a surprise waiting, and it ain't a birthday present.
Just be sure you don't shoot me or John. John, you cut around and cover the back door in case they try to go in that way. I'll watch the front.
This sounds a little dangerous. Reckon you could get me extra pay for it?
Just remember how many free drinks Oscar has given you.
They left through the bat wings and turned into the darkness at the side of Oscar's saloon. John walked down to the far end near the back door. Andy saw Oscar blow out the lantern that hung on the front porch. That threw the area outside the saloon into near darkness, compromised only by a pale light from the lamp on the bar. Andy found himself sweating. He usually did when he faced the probability of a fight. It was something he never talked to other rangers about. He feared that they'd take it as a sign of weakness and have less confidence in him. He rubbed a clammy hand on a trouser leg and concentrated on the street. He didn't wait long. 3 horsemen moved in the darkness. They pulled up in front of the saloon. The 2 with faces covered dismounted and handed their bridle reins to the 3rd rider. His face was masked, but his wiry form indicated he was young. The 2 stepped up onto Oscar's porch, paused a moment as if summoning their nerve, and walked through the door. Seemingly from nowhere, a large man appeared on foot, grabbed the reins to one of the horses, and quickly swung into the saddle. He said something sharp, then drove a hard fist against the rider's jaw. He grabbed the young man to keep him from falling, then set both horses into a run back up the street. Andy froze. He could almost swear he had seen Cordell. It was like reliving the jailbreak. Oscar's shotgun blast reverberated like a cannon inside the saloon. One of the robbers rushed out the door and turned to fire his pistol back into the saloon.
Stop! Drop the gun!
Instead, the man whirled and triggered a quick shot in Andy's direction. Andy fired. The man doubled over, staggered, then sprawled on the porch. Andy ran to the saloon.
Everything all right out there?
It's over with.
John came running around the corner, pistol in his hand. He and Andy stopped on the porch over the would-be robber lying on his stomach. Andy turned him over and pulled off the sack that had hidden his face. The robber was young, his eyes full of terror.
It wasn't supposed to happen like this. Somebody help me.
He reached out a hand that let it drop. He trembled and went still. Andy shuddered. Rusty Shannon told him he should never become so hardened that it didn't disturb him to kill someone, even in self-defense. He doubted that he ever would. He hoped he never would. Oscar came onto the porch holding a bar lamp.
It was the Keelers, all right. But where's Dopey Jackson? I figured he was with them.
Andy considered telling what he'd seen, but instinct told him to wait. The name Jackson nagged at him until he remembered where he'd heard it. That was the name of the young outlaw he shot when Cordell was being broken out of jail. Andy helped bury him. Pieces began coming together.
Looks like you might have figured wrong.
I suppose I did. Those 2 were all that I saw, but it wouldn't hurt to talk to Dopey. He might know something about this.
I'll talk to him. Where does he live?
Jackson and his mother live east of town on the river. A widow. Nice woman, but she raised 2 wild sons. The older one ran away from home. I've been expecting the younger one to do the same thing.
The older one? What was his name?
David. He seemed like a decent kid till he took to the wild bunch. Why? You know something about him?
Just curious.
Andy beckoned to John.
We gotta take us a ride.
Right now?
We won't sleep tonight anyway, not after this. Let's go saddle up.
Lamplight shone through the farmhouse window.
No respectable farmers awake this long after midnight unless somebody's sick.
Maybe you've been hunting Cordell so long that everybody has started to look like him.
Maybe. We're fixing to find out.
Andy dismounted and moved up to a window propped open with a stick. In the dull light of a lamp, he saw a woman sitting with a young man at a kitchen table. He assumed, from what Oscar told him, that they were Mrs. Jackson and her son, Dobie. A large man stood nearby, turned away so that Andy couldn't see his face.
But they think I went coward and ran out on them.
Son, those killers are bad blood. It makes no difference what they think. The main thing is that Mr. Goodson probably saved you from going to the penitentiary. Or to your grave.
Who is he to be running my life? He ain't my pa, and he ain't your husband. He ain't nobody.
Boy, you were fixing to set your foot on the road to perdition.
What would you know about that? Are you a preacher or something?
I'm a long way from being a preacher, but I know that road. I've been on it. I'm still on it. It's hard to get off of.
He placed a hand on Dobie's shoulder. Dobie twisted away from him.
It was my doing as much as his. I asked Mr. Goodson to stop you.
Why don't you mind your own business? You're nagging me like you nagged David. It was you that made him run away from home.
I was trying to keep him from making a bad mistake. The same kind you were about to make tonight.
So he got a belly full of it and left. Now you've no idea where he's at.
I wish to God I did.
I've had it in mind to go and find him. That's why I went with the Keelers, to get some traveling money.
As Mrs. Jackson wept, the man stepped up closer and moved a hand as if to touch her, then changed his mind and drew it away.
Aurelio, there's something I gotta tell you. I've been meaning to from the first. I could not bring myself to do it. Dobie, there's no use in you looking for David. He dead.
Dobie froze.
He made a mistake of throwing in with a bad man. That mistake got him killed.
Mrs. Jackson seemed too stunned to speak.
What bad man?
Me.
Andy had heard enough. Though he'd not seen the face, he knew this was Cordell. Drawing his pistol, he motioned for John to follow him through the kitchen door.
Luther Cordell, I'm a ranger, and you're under arrest.
Cordell turned slowly, raising his hands. Andy had not seen him without the dark beard he'd worn in jail. Nothing in his face showed him to be the same man, except perhaps the piercing dark eyes. Cordell appeared more resigned than surprised.
You that friend of Sheriff Blessings?
That's right. I am.
You've been following me all along, ain't you?
I have.
Andy wondered at Cordell's unflinching acceptance of his capture.
I didn't know who it was, but I felt it in my bones that somebody was dogging me. I stayed on the move till I got to this place. I kept meaning to go on, but I couldn't do it.
Cordell looked regretfully at Mrs. Jackson.
The longer I stayed, the harder it was to do what I come for.
And what did you come for?
To tell you about your boy, David. I owed it to you to tell you where he buried. And I was going to give you the money that rightfully belonged to him.
If it's the Galveston money, it's not yours to give.
Andy reached out and lifted Cordell's pistol from its holster.
Don't worry. I won't try to get away. I won't bring trouble to this good lady's house. She had enough already.
Luther lowered his hands and sat down at the table.
Really, I'm a wanted man, been one for a long time. But I did not lie to you about my name. It really is Walter Goodson. I borrowed the name Cordell from a man I knew that got killed in the war. I didn't figure it could hurt him none.
What about David?
Well, I call him Buster, because I didn't even know his rightful name for a long time. He was pitiful as a lost pup. Broke and hungry, looking for somebody to join up with. I fed him. I tried to run him off, but he kept following me. I got to where I liked having him around. I wished a thousand times that I'd turned him away. It would have been a kindness.
Cordell looked at Dobie.
That's why I stopped you tonight. I didn't want you to end up like your brother.
I saw what you did in town. It was the right thing. Keeler brothers are dead.
Dead? Sully and Finn both?
Both of them.
Dobie seemed to wilt.
You don't have to arrest Dobie now, do you, Ranger? He never set foot in that saloon. He was gone before the shooting took place.
Andy saw grief and fear in Mrs. Jackson's eyes. His voice was severe as he spoke to Dobie.
Boy, you came within an inch of being killed. If it wasn't for Cordell, you'd likely be laid out at the Undertaker's right now, alongside the Keelers.
Dobie was still stunned. He turned to Cordell.
Do you know for sure that my brother's dead?
I was with him when he died.
And I was there at the burying.
Mrs. Jackson put her arms around her surviving son's shoulders and cried. Cordell's question was still unanswered.
You let the boy go. I promise I won't try to get away from you. Not now, not later.
I don't see the harm. Maybe he's learned something. I wouldn't want to see the lady lose another son.
Cordell attempted a smile, but it didn't quite come off.
Well, I'm much obliged. So, what do we do now?
Andy placed the cuffs on Cordell's wrists.
We get that Galveston money and then we head east.
What about me? Don't you think I ought to go along to help you guard him?
Andy knew John was mainly interested in getting paid a while longer.
You heard him, John. He promised he won't try to get away.
Ain't you ever had an outlaw lie to you?
All right, you're still on the payroll, even if it comes out of my pocket.
Just till we get to my place. If you need help after that, you'll have to hire somebody else. I've got things of my own to do.
Mrs. Jackson took control of her emotions and set about making breakfast.
It'll be daylight pretty soon. Y'all shouldn't start a long trip on an empty stomach.
The way she looked at Cordell told Andy she wished he would never go. Andy wondered again what it was about the man that drew so many people to him. He was an outlaw, after all, yet people instinctively liked him.
Cordell, I can't figure you out. At the start, I took it for granted that you shot Tom Blessing. Now the way folks keep taking up for you, I wonder.
Milt Haywood done it. I didn't intend for him and the boy to bust me loose. I never seen a jail I couldn't get out of by myself. But Milt was anxious for his share of the Galveston take. He never was one for waiting. I cussed him good for shooting that sheriff. There wasn't no need for it.
Where do you suppose he is now?
Well, with Milt, there ain't no telling. He could be any place.
If I could catch him and make him talk, the law might go easier on you. As it is, all I've got is your word that you didn't shoot Tom.
Well, I don't reckon my word worth a plug, Nickel.
Andy pondered.
It is to me, but it might not be enough for a court.
Look like my goose is cooked.
Mrs. Jackson poured coffee and brought scrambled eggs and bacon to the table. She looked in the oven.
Biscuits are almost ready.
Andy noticed her eyes were on Cordell, except when she had to tend to her cooking. He saw there a look that he had sometimes seen in Bethel's eyes.
You look like a man who could do anything he wanted to. How'd you come to get started on the wrong side of the law?
Yeah, well, after the war, I lost everything that meant anything to me. Didn't have coin enough in my pocket to buy coffee. I come onto this little country bank just sitting there, doing nothing. I thought about all that money in it just sitting there, doing nothing. I decided I'm gonna put it to work. I'd have been happy to quit after that, but the law wouldn't let me stop anywhere long enough to hold an honest job. Pretty soon, I'm broke, I'm hungry again. I found me another bank. It's been like that ever since. I wanted to. I'd do it in a minute if the law wasn't crowding me. If I could start fresh over, I'd be the happiest dirt farmer you ever saw.
He turned to Dobie.
I've been trying to tell you about that road to perdition. I've been on it a long time and trying hard to get off.
He means it, Ranger. Can't you see that?
Andy felt himself caught in a bind.
I'm sorry, but I'm honor bound to bring in Luther Cordell.
Andy and John had tied their horses 30 yards from the house. John went to fetch them while Andy and Cordell walked to the barn. The sun was just coming up, hitting Andy in the eyes.
That'd be my man, the pen.
Cordell opened the gate.
Don't worry. I didn't steal her. I bought her fair and square.
I met the old man you bought her from. He stood up for you, said you're on the square.
I always tried to be after my fashion. I never robbed anybody that didn't have too much money for his own damn good anyway.
Andy had holstered his pistol, but he kept his hand on the butt of it. Though Cordell had promised not to try to get away, Andy had observed that even the most honest of men would lie now and again if the stakes were high enough.
Get her saddled and tell me where you hid the money.
In the barn. I found a loose board under the saddle rack. Lift it up. There'll be my saddlebags.
John arrived, leading his and Andy's horses. Andy motioned to him and John entered the barn. In a minute, he was back with the saddlebags. He opened one.
I never saw so much money in all my life.
Yeah, should be something over $9,000. Now, I did have to spend a little bit along the way because it costs right smart to live nowadays. Have you seen the price of flour and coffee?
Do we really have to turn it in? We could split it and say he spent it all. I'd be almost as rich as old Thaddeus.
Andy was not sure John was joking until he saw a boyish grin spread across the man's face.
Don't even talk about it, unless you want to find out if a Comanche can whip a Choctaw.
Mrs. Jackson and Dobie came up together from the house. She had her hands clasped in front of her, and her eyes glistened.
Mr. Goodson, when you get free, you'll always be welcome here.
Cordell's expression was downcast.
Rangel, I owe her a decent goodbye.
Go ahead.
The outlaw walked to her, leading the mare. Despite the cuffs around his wrists, he took her hands in a tight grip.
Aurelio.
Her eyes filled with tears. She grasped his shoulders and kissed him.
I know.
Dobie watched with amazement. Cordell turned to him.
You remember what I told you about that road to perdition? Take good care of your mama. She needs you real bad.
Dobie looked dazed. He said nothing.
Aurelio, he learned a lot today. Once he sorted it all out, I believe he's gonna be all right.
The bewhiskered horseman rode out from behind the barn, taking Andy by surprise, brandishing a pistol.
Everybody raise your hands where I can see them.
He poked the muzzle in Andy's and John's direction.
You too. Drop them guns on the ground. Do it with your left hands.
He was almost as large as Cordell. Andy recognized him.
That's a jaybird that busted my ribs.
I'll do worse if anybody messes with me.
He turned his attention to Cordell.
Howdy, Luther. I've worn out 3 horses trying to find you.
I thought you ran off to Mexico, Milt.
Started to, but I kept thinking about the money you were supposed to hold for me. You still got it in them saddlebags?
He motioned toward the pouches Andy had just tied to his saddle.
Yeah, except for what little I spent. How you managed to trail me so far?
I couldn't. You were too slippery. But I figured the ranger was trailing you, so I followed him. I hoped he'd catch up to you sooner or later.
Andy realized why Hayward didn't shoot him when he wounded John. He needed Andy to lead him to Cordell.
You left before we could make the split, you know. I always intended to give you your share.
No, I bet you did. Luther, I like the way them handcuffs fit you. As long as the law has got you, I don't have to worry about you coming after me. And I don't have to settle for part of that money. I can take all of it.
Cordell's jaw tightened in anger.
That woman will be good insurance for me. I'm taking her along. If anybody crowds me, she's dead.
No!
Dobie moved protectively in front of his mother.
Take me if you need somebody, but leave her alone.
You fool, kid. Move aside, or I'll have to shoot you.
Mrs. Jackson gently pushed her son away.
Do what he says.
You're the man that shot Tom Blessing.
What, you mean the clodhopper, Sheriff? Damn fool got in my way.
You'd better ride far and fast, because I'll be coming after you.
Hayward's eyes had a poisonous look.
Yeah, there's one way to take care of that.
He pointed the pistol into Andy's face. Cordell took a quick step forward, placing himself between Andy and Hayward.
Damn it, Milt, killing a ranger bring all the law in Texas down on us. You leave him to me. Let me pick up one of the guns. I'll see that he gives you a long head start.
Hayward shook his head.
Well, maybe you'd shoot me and him both and keep the money yourself. I ain't no tenderfoot. Now step out the way.
Cordell didn't move. Hayward began to look flustered.
All right, Luther. I won't shoot the ranger. You can bring them saddlebags to me yourself. And woman, get on that mare.
Dobie again stepped in front of his mother.
He means what he say. For your mama's sake, you better do it. Don't you hurt this woman. I'll follow you to hell's far side.
Fetch me that money, or I will shoot somebody.
Hampered by the cuffs, Cordell fumbled in detaching the bags from Andy's saddle. He moved toward Hayward.
Here they are, be damned.
Cordell flung the saddlebags at the horse. The startled animal jumped, swinging his head and squealing.
Hey! Son of a bitch!
Almost unseated, Hayward grabbed at the saddle horn.
Let's get him, Ranger!
Luther grabbed up the pistol John had dropped, but Hayward fired first. Hayward's frightened horse kicked up clods of earth as it pitched out from under it. The outlaw fell heavily but kept his grip on a pistol. In the moment of confusion, Andy retrieved his own weapon and fired. Hayward jerked as the bullet drove into his chest, but he didn't drop the pistol. Andy fired again. Hayward pitched forward beside the saddlebags.
Burn in hell, all of you.
He reached for the bags, but his clawing fingers only scraped dirt. Andy felt no nausea this time. Instead, he felt satisfaction and a sense of closure. Now maybe Tom Blessing could rest easy.
Thanks, Cordell. You made a good try.
Aurelia Jackson grabbed her son and gave him a sweeping glance up and down.
Did he hit you, son?
No, but I think he got Mr. Goodson.
Andy had been too busy to see Cordell fall. He took two long strides, dropped to one knee, and turned Cordell over onto his back. Blood pumped from a wound in his shoulder.
At least he missed the heart. John, you'd better hitch up the wagon. We have to get him to town pretty quick or we'll lose him.
He tried to staunch the blood with a handkerchief, but it was not enough. Aurelia was on her knees, her arm around Cordell, tears in her eyes.
That might be better than spending the rest of his life in the penitentiary. Oh, Lord, no, I didn't mean it. Hold on, Mr. Goodson. Please hold on.
Andy drew back, addled by the way a situation that seemed so simple and straightforward had taken such an unexpected turn. Dobie hurried to the house and brought back a couple of towels. Andy tore Cordell's shirt open and pressed one against the wound.
Hold it tight so he won't bleed to death.
John brought up the wagon.
Andy, if you know any Comanche medicine songs, this might be a good time to sing them.
I don't remember one. You know any?
Us Choctaws don't believe in that foolishness.
Mrs. Jackson, hold that towel tight on the wound, and Dobie, don't take it too fast. The fewer bumps, the better. We'll be right behind you.
Andy turned his attention to Hayward's still form.
We've got to take Cordell's body in to show the deputy.
What do you mean, Cordell's body? Cordell's in the wagon.
No, that's Mr. Goodson.
Andy pointed with his chin toward the man on the ground.
This is Cordell.
It took John a moment to absorb what Andy was saying.
You went to a lot of trouble to find him. Now you're letting him go.
I was after the man who killed Tom Blessing. I got him. That's as much as anybody needs to know.
You're taking a hell of a chance. If Cordell ever goes outlaw again, they won't only be looking for him. They'll be looking for you.
Andy watched the wagon moving down the trail, Dobie driving the team. Aurelia Jackson sat in the wagon bed. The man she knew as Goodson lay with his head in her lap.
The dead don't come back to life. Luther Cordell is dead, and we'll give him a tombstone to prove it.
Judge Tompkins stood up from his paper-strewn desk and took a half-smoked cigar from his mouth as Andy walked into his office.
The prodigal has returned. Ranger headquarters sent us a wire saying you got your man.
Dead and buried. Anything new around here?
A little. You been out to the Brackett farm yet?
No, I've been sort of dreading it.
Now, I suspect that little girl will be glad to see you.
But her brother won't. I had one fist fight with him. I left to keep from having another. I doubt his temperament has changed much.
He's got more things to worry about than a little argument with you. We've set the date for a special election to fill Tom Blessing's job as sheriff. Farley Brackett was the first to file.
Yeah, I figured as much.
But he's got an opposition. A group of us convinced Rusty Shannon that the county needs a better sheriff than Farley. From what I can tell, most people around here agree with us. On election day, Farley is going to feel like a cyclone hit him. I think he already senses it.
Andy took pleasure in the thought that Rusty would be the next sheriff. But defeat would probably make Farley even more antagonistic than he already was. The judge sorted through several papers on his desk.
I got a wire here from the state ranger's office. It's for you. They're pleased with what you've done. They're offering you a new station.
Andy read the wire. It should have been good news, but it left him feeling cold.
Kerrville's a long way from here. A long way from Bethel.
And from Farley.
That part I like.
There's something else. Being gone, you haven't heard. Old Mrs. Brackett died a couple of days after you left. Bethel's feeling pretty low. She lost her mother, and she figures she's lost you. Has she?
Not if I can help it.
The dog met Andy 100 yards from the Brackett farmhouse and escorted him in, barking an announcement all the way. Farley walked out onto the front porch and waited for him.
Back, are you?
Andy tensed, half expecting Farley to order him off the place.
For just a little while.
I expect you came to see Bethel. She's inside.
Andy stepped down and tied his horse to a post.
I suppose you heard that your friend Rusty Shannon is running against me.
So I've been told.
From everything I hear, I'd just as well withdraw. I can't understand what people around here have got against me.
Farley stepped down from the porch and started toward the barn. He stopped and turned half around.
You know, this county's got more sunshine, more sunflowers, and more sons of bitches than any place I've ever been.
Farley stalked away, his shoulders hunched. Bethel stepped out on the porch to meet Andy. He thought he remembered how beautiful she was, but she looked even better as she moved eagerly into his arms.
I just now heard about your mother. I'm sorry.
A tear moved down Bethel's cheek.
It was her time. She was ready to go. It was just Farley and Teresa and me. And you.
Andy stepped back, lifted the message from his shirt pocket, and unfolded it.
I won't be here for long.
He handed her the paper.
They're sending me off to West Texas, to Kerrville.
I've heard you talk a lot about the Hill Country. You loved it when you were stationed there.
I always figured to have a place of my own someday. Maybe I'll find it out in the hills.
She read the wire and looked up at him.
All right. When do we leave?
We?
Farley can run the farm to suit himself. With Mother gone, there's nothing to keep me here. We're free to go.
But what would people say? Us going off together and not even married.
She clasped her hands behind his neck, pulled him down, and kissed him.
That should be real easy to fix.
Texas Rangers, Hard Trail to Follow is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2007, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Danny Gavigan, Tim Getman, Katie Foster, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, James Lewis, Andy Clements, Nanette Savard, Drew Kopas, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, M.B. Van Dorn, Tim Carlin, Lily Beacon, Tony Nam, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Graybill, Peter Stray, Thomas Penny, Gary Tells, Johan Detweiler, Jeff Allen, Yasmin Toison, Sherry Edelin, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. With original music by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Texas Rangers, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's series, Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man and The Last Gunfighter, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
What's happened?
Empire Lines Princess Philomena just arrived in system, squalling like a banshee. Apparently, the pirates hit Bissonnette and have taken over the government. Blew through the planetary space militias if they weren't there.
This is more than one pirate gang could do. It'd take a space fleet near enough.
Do they have a name for themselves?
The Deep Space Benevolent Association, commanded by one Gamus Turek. What are you going to do about this fellow?
Kill him! When we can, at least.
Your niece Kai has a letter with Mark.
She what? You just made her more of a target. There's no way she can fight effectively with that old crate she's in. And now you've given our enemies even more reason to go after her.
But I watched her for the year she was at the academy. She'll make a better privateer than regular officer, actually. Intelligent, quick, capable, and if I'm not mistaken, has the true killer instinct.
I hope not.
Captain Vada, you've heard about the Philomena, of course.
Yes.
Captain Biston says the pirates had a whole fleet, 14 ships at least.
I know. What we need is a true interstellar force. I'm thinking of the other privateers. We need to find them, get them working with us. I think it's essential.
I don't see how. We don't even know where the others are, and I don't know how to fight a fleet action.
I do.
A lone assassin?
Miss Grace!
Caitlin, go in the kitchen and stay there.
The police!
Don't call them. Helen, how bad is it?
Not hurt, just stunned. Char?
Get Justin inside if you can. I'll get Char. Sorry. Easy now, Buttercup. Char, it's time to go in.
What happened to Rosie? Did you shoot Rosie? Bad word! Grandma said...
Stay down, Char. Stay flat and be quiet, and hold still no matter what. You!
You're having an interesting morning. Stay with me now, come on.
Vata's War, Book 3, Engaging the Enemy, Part 1, in graphic audio.
What is it?
There is something.
I feel it too. A scent in the air. Like death.
You are surprised that I would help to finance Abbot Orland's ascension?
That is the business of the Abelicans. I do not understand why we should choose to get involved.
Our relationship with the Abelicans will prove of utmost importance in the crucial time that will soon be before us. All is in place. I will be reborn, and you will be there to watch over me until we are again united. I know this because I have been reborn time and time again. And after you witness the great transcendence, you will rest easier at night, in full confidence that Yatol is with us every step.
Welcome, fiends. You will all die!
I have seen the chi. I have touched the chi. I have grasped it. I know it.
I had hoped that you would see it, Paganel. It is good that you have, for now there is a road before you.
I would walk the path of all colors, Master Chaos.
You understand the danger?
To wait is folly, for I am prepared.
Have you determined your road beyond that?
Togai, I have seen the steps and the grasses in my dreams, and I know that I must return there.
Don't miss Part 1 of the Demon War Saga Book 6, Transcendence. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.